All right, welcome everybody to another deep dive here on Lexaplug. Today we're going to be looking at something kind of interesting, I think, a little bit out of Minnesota. We're going to be talking about State v. McPhee. And I think it really boils down to a fundamental question here.
Yeah.
Can we use juvenile records to enhance adult sentences? Or does that, you know, step on some Sixth Amendment toes when it comes to the right to a jury trial?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a really interesting case, and we have a lot of great source material for it. We have the full case brief from the Minnesota Supreme Court. We have a standard legal brief on the McPhee case itself. And we also have, believe it or not, some insights from like a fictional podcast that I think will help us kind of frame the core arguments at play here. And I think, as you said, it really boils down to this question of, you know, is there this constitutional kind of friction between, you know, what the Minnesota Supreme Court majority said and what this really pointed dissent had to say? And I think ultimately this deep dive will help us understand like how sentencing works in the U.S.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, I think it's always interesting to see how, you know, cases from state Supreme Courts kind of percolate up and maybe even influence, you know, how the federal courts are thinking about things. So let's just jump right in. The facts of the case were pretty straightforward. We have Mr. McPhee who pleaded guilty to making terroristic threats, which on its face, you know, sounds like, all right, there we go, you know, open and shut case. But then when it came time for sentencing, the court brought in a prior juvenile adjudication. And we know that Minnesota sentencing guidelines actually prioritize a comprehensive criminal history. So that ended up bumping his criminal history score up, which led to a longer sentence than he would have received otherwise. So that's where McPhee kind of steps in and says, hold on a second, this is violating my Sixth Amendment right to a jury trial, and kind of leans on the big Apprendi v. New Jersey Supreme Court case.
Right. And I think that's the immediate like conflict that's so interesting here is this head-on collision with Apprendi, because as I'm sure, you know, our listeners will remember, the general rule in Apprendi is that any fact that increases the sentence beyond the statutory maximum other than a prior conviction has to be found by a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. And so McPhee's argument here, which is a really, really good one, is that, hey, you know, juvenile adjudications just simply don't involve juries. So how are you going to, you know, use this against me in sentencing?
Yeah. So we've got this core conflict now. Can the state, you know, pull in this juvenile adjudication where there was no jury present to actually enhance his sentence as an adult?
Yeah.
Sounds like you're walking a pretty, you know, thin constitutional line here.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the Minnesota Supreme Court, you know, the majority opinion was written by Chief Justice Gildea, and they said, no, there's no Sixth Amendment violation here. And their whole argument really hinges on that prior conviction exception that the Apprendi case carved out. But as you, you know, so astutely pointed out, a juvenile adjudication isn't a criminal conviction in the same way that, like, you know, an adult felony conviction is. So how do we kind of square that circle?
Yeah, it does seem like they're taking a pretty big leap there.
Yeah.
So how did they justify that? Was the reasoning for saying that, you know, this non-jury juvenile finding could be a prior conviction for the purpose of the Apprendi exception?
Well, the majority leaned really heavily on the fact that Minnesota's juvenile justice system has all of these procedural safeguards in place. And, you know, they really honed in on the fact that, you know, juveniles have the right to an attorney. They have the right to confront witnesses and cross-examine them. The standard of proof is beyond a reasonable doubt. So it's the same standard as in adult criminal trials. And so their argument was that these safeguards were robust enough that they provided, you know, kind of a comparable level of reliability. And so it was okay to treat these juvenile adjudications as, you know, essentially prior convictions, at least for this very narrow purpose of the Apprendi exception.
Right. So they're saying it's not so much about the jury itself, but it's more about the reliability of that process that led to the finding in the juvenile case, regardless of whether a jury was involved or not. So they're saying that, you know, because it was fair and reliable, it's fair game to then bring that in later and enhance an adult sentence based on those facts.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, they acknowledge that juries aren't part of the picture in juvenile court, but, you know, they really downplay the need for a jury in this specific context. Their argument was basically that if a jury were to be involved in the adult sentencing, you know, when looking at a prior juvenile adjudication, the jury's role would really be very limited. Like, they'd basically be saying, yes, this document exists and it's valid. And they also pointed out, you know, something very specific to Minnesota, which is that their sentencing philosophy really strongly favors knowing everything they can about the offender's history to inform their sentencing decisions and, you know, according to the state, to better protect public safety.
Yeah, I can see, you know, from a policy perspective, how that makes a lot of sense. But it does feel like we're dancing around this question of, You know, isn't there this fundamental constitutional right to have a jury decide the facts that are going to lead to, you know, a longer prison sentence for you?
Yeah.
And, you know, this is where this really fiery dissent from Justice Meyer comes in. He had a very different take on this.
Oh, absolutely. He wrote a very strong dissent. And basically, his argument is that juvenile proceedings are fundamentally different from adult criminal trials. And he called them quasi-civil in nature. And, you know, he really emphasized the point that the goal of the juvenile system is rehabilitation. It's not punishment in the same way that we think of it in the adult system. So his big objection is that using these adjudications, which don't have a jury trial as part of the process, to basically punish somebody more harshly when they become an adult, just, you know, totally undermines the whole purpose of having a juvenile system in the first place. He felt very strongly that it was a Sixth Amendment violation.
So he's saying it's not just a question of, you know, was the juvenile proceeding reliable enough? It's about the nature of the proceeding itself and whether it should even be considered in this way. So I guess from his point of view, this feels like a pretty big and inappropriate expansion of that, you know, prior conviction exception that Apprendi talked about.
Exactly, yeah. He thinks that that exception should be interpreted very narrowly. And he really believes that this right to a jury trial isn't just, you know, some procedural thing to make sure we get the facts right, but it's a fundamental constitutional right.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, a really important part of having democratic accountability in the way that we sentence people. So he felt like by saying, you know, okay, a judge decided this in a juvenile case, and now we can use that to give this person a longer sentence as an adult, the majority was chipping away at this really important right. And, you know, his concern went beyond McPhee's case. He felt that this was just a really bad precedent to set.
Right. And I think it's interesting because, you know, going back to the materials that we read, I remember the dissent also kind of brought up, you know, what could happen down the line? Like, mm-hmm. could this ruling actually change the way juvenile courts function?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That was a really interesting part of Justice Meyer's dissent. He kind of warned that if these juvenile adjudications can be used to basically hand down harsher sentences to people when they become adults, there's going to be a lot more pressure to just, you know, start having juries in juvenile courts to begin with. And he felt that this would really blur the lines between the purpose of the juvenile system, which again is rehabilitation, and the adult system, which is more focused on punishment. So he felt like the majority opinion could actually lead to this unintended consequence of making juvenile courts look and act a lot more like regular criminal courts, which would, you know, obviously be a huge shift. And what was interesting is that the majority actually directly addressed this in their opinion. They said, you know, look, our decision here doesn't mean that states have to change how their juvenile courts work.
Okay, well, that's reassuring, I guess. But let's just take a step back for a second and go back to Apprendi, because I think it's helpful to mm-hmm. just kind of solidify what we're talking about here. So Apprendi basically says any fact that bumps up your sentence beyond the maximum has to be decided by a jury, unless it's a prior conviction.
Right. So the big question in McPhee is, can we actually call a juvenile adjudication a prior conviction when it didn't even involve a jury?
Exactly. It all comes down to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, you have the procedural safeguards that exist in Minnesota's juvenile courts. They have the right to an attorney. The standard is beyond a reasonable doubt, all of that. But then, you know, there's this other side of the coin, which is that, well, they don't have this fundamental right to a jury trial. So the majority basically said those procedural safeguards are good enough for us to call this a prior conviction. But the dissent said, no, you can't do that because they didn't have a jury. So really, this case kind of forces us to think about, you know, what's more important here? Is it about making sure that, you know, the facts that they're using against you were decided in a fair way? Or is it about the fact that, you know, in our system, we have this fundamental right to have a jury make those decisions, especially when those decisions are going to really impact, you know, how much time you're going to spend in prison. So, you know, if we zoom out a little bit here, what are some of the bigger implications of this McPhee decision? Like, how should we be thinking about juvenile records when we're dealing with, you know, the adult justice system?
Yeah, that's a really big question, right? It's like, are we okay with using records that came from a system that was really focused on rehabilitation? You know, are we okay with using those to punish someone more harshly as an adult? I think the majority, by really focusing on the reliability of the juvenile process, they basically said, yes, that's fine. But the dissent, by constantly saying, hey, there was no jury here, I think they're raising a really good point about, you know, is this really fair? And does this kind of muddy the waters between these two systems, the juvenile and the adult system, that are supposed to operate differently?
Right. And, you know, we talked earlier about how Minnesota really likes to have the full picture when they're deciding on a sentence. But do you think there are any downsides to that kind of thinking?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that jumps out at me is, you know, how this could affect plea bargaining in the juvenile system. Like, imagine you're a young person and you know that even if you get, you know, an adjudication in juvenile court where you don't have the right to a jury, that could come back and bite you later when you're an adult. You might be a lot less likely to take a plea deal, right? And so you might end up with a lot more trials in juvenile court, which could really clog up the system. And it might mean that more young people end up going through this whole formal court process when maybe, you know, something less formal would have been better for them in terms of rehabilitation. So I think it definitely raises some questions about, you know, what's more important, having every single detail about a person's past or thinking about what's actually best for young people in the juvenile system.
Yeah, that's a great point. And you know, the other thing that I thought was interesting is that the Minnesota Supreme Court, they already acknowledged that there's a split in the federal courts about this whole issue. So even though Minnesota's kind of picked a side now, it's clearly not the end of the story.
Oh, for sure. And I think that just highlights that this whole thing about how Apprendi applies to juvenile adjudications, it's still a really big question that courts are wrestling with. And it really comes down to, you know, how do we balance the need to have all the information when we're sentencing someone as an adult with this really fundamental constitutional right to a jury trial, especially when we're dealing with records that come from a system that has totally different goals.
So for our listeners out there, you know, the law students are trying to wrap their heads around all of this. What would you say is, you know, the big takeaway from State v. McPhee?
Well, I think for law students, this case is a great example of how the law can be really messy sometimes. You have these fundamental principles that can kind of bump up against each other, and courts have to figure out how to make sense of all of that. And McPhee is a perfect example of that, right? Because you have this Apprendi case that seems pretty straightforward, but then you get this exception for prior convictions, and suddenly things get a lot more complicated. And I think McPhee shows us that most courts are okay with using juvenile adjudications to increase adult sentences, but it's definitely not settled law everywhere. So I think law students should really pay attention to how other courts are handling this issue because it's definitely something that's still being debated and could change in the future.
And at the end of the day, you know, Justice Meyer really nailed it in his dissent. This case is about the big picture stuff. It's about the role of juries in our system and the role of judges. And, you know, it's about the balance of power in our government, because we're talking about people's freedom here, and that's not something to be taken lightly.
Absolutely. It makes us think about, you know, it's not just about whether the information is accurate, it's about who gets to decide if that information is accurate. And, you know, when that information can send you to prison for longer, that's a huge deal.
So just to kind of wrap things up here, I think State v. McPhee is a really powerful example of this constant tension that we see in our legal system. On one hand, we want judges to have all the information they need to give out fair sentences. But on the other hand, we have this right to a jury trial that's supposed to protect us from the government overstepping its bounds.
Yeah, and I think it leaves us with a really tough question, right? When we're using these juvenile records to decide how long someone should spend in prison as an adult, are we really being fair? Is it enough to say, well, the process was fair in juvenile court? Or does the fact that there was no jury change everything? Is that something that the Constitution just doesn't allow? These are big, complex questions that I think everyone needs to be thinking about.
I think that's a great point to end on. You know, what is fair? What is, these are questions that we're always going to be grappling with, and cases like McPhee really force us to confront those questions head on. So thanks for joining me on this deep dive, and we'll see you next time.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.